Well, good morning. Good morning to everyone. It is Thursday, March 26th, and it is a great day. I want to say that my name is Jerry, and I am actually out here with Men, Money, and Food, the Clarity Hotline. And my co-host, Laura, you want to say something before I read our disclaimers or our truth statements?
Good morning, Jerry. How are you? I'm Laura, coming to you from Cleveland, Ohio, 59 degrees and sunny.
Oh, it's 47 in Chicago. All right. Have a quick comment or question. Give us a call at 704-802-5056. Hit the star key twice on your phone to signal the host. Watch background noise, as always. You just want to listen? You can hang on the line listening or chat with us at uberconference.com Black Talk Radio Network. So that's kind of some of the ways that you guys can be included in this podcast, and we definitely want you guys to do that. So you need to remember to hit the star key twice to signal the host that you want to get in the conversation. So, Laura, those are my duties, and so now we can get to the fun. Does that sound cool?
That sounds great, Jerry. What's going on this morning?
I'm going to let you start. I'm going to read what we're going to be talking about. So we're still in the middle of this COVID-19. So the latest that I have heard, the stimulus package, it has been approved for so-called taxpayers. And MMF, the Clarity Hotline, asks, who in America is not a taxpayer? Okay. And also, I think it's still only half of the Congress has approved it. So the title of our program is Taxpayer, America's Favorite Money Double Entendre. Even in an unprecedented global pandemic, Congress goes to work and is halfway to a stimulus package that will exclude millions of Americans. So, I say this: food, cell phone bills, water, snacks, utilities, and we're not even going to talk about hotel rooms. And did I say cell phone bills? A double entendre is a phrase or figure of speech that could have two different meanings or that could be understood two different ways, innocent or not. Yet, every day, 99% of Americans over 18 pay some variation of a tax. Yet Congress uses the broad term taxpayer as code for only those Americans filing a yearly income tax statement, making the term an insidious double entendre. And then, also, we're going to cover in this, and like we said, not in order, because we're actually going to start with Laura talking about the recovery from people's symptoms with the coronavirus. But then we're going to have some fun today because we have done a wonderful job. We're raising money here, and Scotty has a great platform. And I saw something that was so much fun last night. I want you guys to go out and look at it. It was a sister talking about this new Netflix documentary about MJ Walker and all of the lies was in it. It was really, really good. Scotty has it out there. But I also want to go back, and since we're all here huddled at home, and Laura says she's not sure about this one, but The Spook from 1973. We're going to look at very, very good old movies while you obey the stay in shelter order. And Laura, we're going to talk about in Chicago, they're not obeying. They were at the beach yesterday. Okay, but anyway. Jerry is suggesting that you go. Yeah, they were. They're talking about closing down the beach in Chicago because they went out. But I want everybody to go out and watch one of my this may be my favorite movie. It's Sam Greenlee's The Spook Who Sat by the Door. It's a cult classic from the mid-1970s. It was made in about 1973. And it may still be free if you go out on YouTube. I would suggest you do that today. It's really, really, really good. It's a fun movie, and we can talk about how it was made in 1973, but it's unlikely that it could be made today. So, Laura, we'll talk about that. So, Laura, I want you to start out, though, talking about the recovery. You sent me an email where you talked about people are recovering from this virus. You want to talk about that?
Well, yeah, I find it interesting that that is missing from the news, talking about the good news that this virus, this COVID-19, this coronavirus, has a very high rate of recovery. I mean, just doing the math, the math comes out to be something like it's in the high 90s of the chances that you'll recover on it, percentage-wise. But I mean, it goes to show you how we cannot keep buying into this news media of all the fear and ignoring the actual effect on it on our lives if we were unfortunate enough to contract this, you know. But this fear, this fear of spreading, that's what they keep talking about, the fear of it spreading. And it's real that it can spread, but the question is, can we talk more about the recovery?
Well, okay,
so real.
Well, I think what you're talking about, too, is mathematical models. And we're going to do a show next week where we're going to start. We got a lot of promises out there. So next week we're going to talk about the difference between research, a researcher and a medical doctor, because we need to really talk about that and what that means. But right now you're talking about the manipulation of mathematical models. And so there are people out there, there's some scientists that I was listening to that were talking about that. Once you start using these math models, you can go all over the place. So like you said, you have some mathematical models, Laura, that claim it's not 90% curable. But like you said, that's sort of going to be the question, like what mathematical models are correct. Like, for instance, I mean, both of you and I, we're not going to get real personal, but both of you have illnesses that were supposed to kill us, right? And I don't talk about mine a lot, but I had a 10% chance to live in 1995. Like, that's real. 90% of the people died. I was in 10% that lived. So, and I'm perfectly well now. I'm just as well as I sound. And Laura, you have had a serious illness and lived, right?
That's right. In fact, I'm finding out more about the disease now that I don't have it. I can speak about what the disease was, called fatty liver disease. And one of the things that can occur in fatty liver disease is sudden death. So that was one of the things that can occur in fatty liver disease, sudden death.
Well, I was told in December 1994 that I had 6 months to live. And most of the people died. Like, that's like what really happened to most of the people, 90%.
Wow.
So that's why it's interesting that me and you are talking about recovery, because that's what we do.
Recovery. Yeah, that just makes everything, that tells all of us. I think talking about recovery gives us hope and gets us out of the realm of thinking about being fear, but and focusing back on, you know, being well and the recovery that occurs. Recovery occurs, you know.
Yeah.
Recovery is occurring. The seasons change. So look at the beautiful day today is out in Cleveland. The sky is, this is possible. It's not winter forever. The seasons change. There's recovery. And certainly with the news reporting, they emphasize in the news, oh my gosh, this disease is spreading. But yes, it's spreading, but the recovery is spreading as well. Recovery is spreading. More people are getting better.
So really, I'm really not gonna get into it because I don't talk a lot about it. But one of the things I did I was diagnosed in December 1994. But anyway, a brilliant child, because see, the best ideas don't always come from scientists. As a matter of fact, they don't at all. But I remember that when I was diagnosed with these, you know, months to live, it was a brilliant. My nephew, actually 19 years old, said, well, if you're going to die anyway, why do you need to go back to the doctor? But anyway, we're not going to get into that, because he was right. Because he kept saying, everybody at the doctor's going to die, but you're not. So let's not go back to the doctor. Let's move on.
But see, there you have it.
Yes, it was like, okay. See, you know, I'm not recommending this for the entire country at all. I'm just telling you all what worked for me. And Wayne Dyer has made a whole, those of us who actually recover, and I'm black, like you said, I'm not the capitalist that he is, but I was certainly certainly know a lot about him because his story, like mine, you know, we're in a rare camp of people that survived things that we were not supposed to survive.
And recovery, you know, must be in your spirit. Recovery is about spiritual growth. And this is why we talk about men, money, and food, because this is ultimately the ultimate spiritual journey. And when we're taking a look at ourselves, our lives, and what's going on with our lives and what makes our lives better. And certainly in the overall picture, focusing on wellness and recovery is a better focus than fear, doubt, insecurity, anger, frustration, and all that. If we focus on recovery, we have a better chance of fighting off the things that come, you know, the assaults that come after us.
That's right. And so we just talk about, like you said, because, you know, like you said, who was I talking to at that time? When you are ill, who are you talking to? I got to the point where I didn't talk to any more ill people because the people that were well kept saying, you're just going to be just like us. You're going to be living. So I was sick, but like you said, 8-9 months. But I was only talking to well people. Like you said, what about that? What is that in terms of the, if you go in, because I did go in. So if you go in and ask for the healing and ask for what, like you said, what the Black Plague is followed by the Industrial Revolution. So by the way, I did change my life and I did not go back to doing any of the things that I was doing previous to 1994. I didn't change my whole life.
There you go. There you go. And this is like a reset button for,
that's right,
you know, for everyone. Well, let's reset. Let's regroup and let's rethink things as far as something as simple as always washing your hands, always using hand sanitizer, always, you know, being more careful about the spread of disease, because we used not to know how diseases spread. Remember,
as a
human group,
come on now.
Then somebody came up with washing hands, and they're like, really, that'll help? Yeah, they didn't know.
And let me give you all another tip that I seriously only thought about yesterday because I smoked outside. By the way, Laura, you all have our weather because we had 60 yesterday and people flooded the beach. So now they're talking about closing the beach because, I mean, it was there. Because even I was out there, but I wasn't close to anybody. I went and did a couple-mile walk, did a 3-mile walk because it was 60. So, I mean, I just wanted to be out. But one of the things I picked up on yesterday, I'm forgetting about, and I know you all have, and whoever thinks about washing, and like I said, I was upstairs cleaning the B&B, my guests are gone, and I was thinking about washing the knobs on the doors. You know, I never thought about that before. We were sterilizing them. So I sterilized all the knobs in the houses.
Yeah, things that people touch because, viruses have always lived on, you know, surfaces, so. Yeah, just being more careful about that, and just being aware of it.
I haven't thought about it. I'm a researcher. I didn't even think about it until now.
Yeah,
ladies.
Uh huh.
This is Scotty, the engineer, and I appreciate y'all giving those tips. But that is one of the tips that they gave was to wash doors, and you know I've been trying to keep our audience informed about things pertaining to this epidemic, and one of the things they say is to wash the doors. Now, obviously, I live in the country. I don't have many visitors at all, you know, other than a few relatives that come by. But if I lived in an apartment building or, you know, I had frequent visitors, I would wash my doors or people touching stuff. You know, if I live in an apartment building, you got common areas. So that one of the things they recommend is that. Now, Laura just brought up a good point about how long viruses can live. So the CDC yesterday just reported that those people that were on those cruise ships, the one that was in Japan and off the coast of California, they discovered that virus was still in those cabins on surfaces for up to 17 days. And
wow.
Yes,
wow.
That's a long time. And
that is.
And of course, that was before they disinfected it. This is when they just, you know, came in and started testing before they did their disinfection. And they said it could last up to 17 days. And then I read an article today that I didn't even think about. And it said that if you go to high traffic areas, like go to the grocery store, go to the doctor or whatnot, and they're saying that this virus can attach itself to the bottom of your shoes because most shoes are non-porous and it's going to be on the surface of the shoes, and said to it can survive up to 5 days on the bottom of your shoes. It is what one expert is putting out there. And the last thing I want to share with y'all is, you know, I hadn't thought about this until I read this article. Masks, these surgical masks that everybody are wearing, or I don't think they're surgical, necessarily called surgical masks.
Right, right. I know what you mean.
But medical masks. Well,
right.
I came across an article that made perfect sense. And they said that what you're trying to do is prevent the virus from entering your nasal passages in your mouth. And of course, you don't want to rub your eyes and stuff like that. But just put on bandana, scarf or something like that, you know, if you don't have access to those masks, which are in very short supply. And I blame outsourcing on why we don't have everything we need. You've been outsourcing the manufacturing to these other countries where you're paying those workers pennies on the dollar, and now it's coming back to bite you.
Yep. And I saw somebody yesterday in the grocery store with a bandana, Scotty. Sure did. I'm going to do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, so listeners, so there's things we can do to protect ourselves, and it's very valuable information to know that this thing can live a really long time. I'm glad he said that. I clean the common area in my building. I shall go out there. I've been wiping down the railway that we use to go downstairs. These areas that people do not think to clean. So we do have to think about cleaning areas, particularly, as he says, in these large, you know, I have a 4 units. And I'm generally, even though we have cleaning people, I'm generally the one that goes above and beyond. So I've got to do that now. So if you're the one that goes above and beyond, you need to be that one. Right now, my mother isn't even letting any of the young people in her house, including me, right now, because she's had some other illnesses, and she needs to do that to protect herself. Laura, how's your mom?
My mom is fine. Thank you for asking. And
okay.
Yeah, my mom is fine. Thanks. I appreciate the asking. I wanted to talk about another thing about how the mentally ill were doing during this virus. This pandemic, and check in with the mentally ill react to things.
Well, in Chicago, I was concerned, but it was I wasn't the only one. People were really starting to raise a lot of hell about our homeless. We have a huge homeless community, and I told you about we were giving more money to the homeless people, at least I was. But now in Chicago, they're putting them up in hotels. So, I guess we'll see. There's some actions being taken to protect these people. So let's hope that they don't start dying in the thousands, as well as in the prisons, which is a whole nother that's another show, because you're talking about close quarters on a whole nother level, and then they get out and they're back in society. So that's some more weaponization. It's just problematic, you know, people that are not in control of their own lives being subject to this, something like this, right?
Oh yeah. Again. Wow. That's a whole lot to unpack, my goodness. And one of the things I wanted to talk about with my theory about the mental ill and mentally ill, when they've gotten an outside reason now it's almost like I know some mentally ill people, and it's helping fuel a lot of their paranoia that was there in the first place, and
you're talking about something else now.
I've switched subjects with the news.
You've switched subjects. Laura, listen, callers, Laura just pivoted. That was a pivot, Laura.
Now, I pivoted to, yes, I pivoted to, I heard some doom and gloom, but it's a familiar doom and gloom, and it's like a reason. I think the people that are, that have these personality disorders are ramping up. Like all the stuff they wanted to do anyway, you know. They're ramping up their craziness, they're ramping up their self-centeredness, and they're ramping up all their negativity. And they're using the disease, the virus, they're using all of that as, this is the reason now. This is the reason why I'm now going to spend the whole day eating. This is the reason why I'm going to spend the whole day in the crack house. This is the reason why I'm going to be estranged from my family members. This is the reason why I just... Okay. Now, estrangement from family members is the sign of being mentally disturbed. So if you know people who are estranged from family, then you know that they're mentally disturbed. I personally have a lot of contact with the mentally ill, but I don't estrange from any of them because I'm not crazy. I see that they're suffering, and I still maintain the relationships. But most people run away from the mentally ill. Because it overwhelms them.
You will not ever convince me that your family doesn't know who you are. Now, see, but the mentally ill always want to tell you themselves. They are the monologue. Remember, the mentally ill are the monologue, and they don't want anybody to ever testify for them. I have a play about that. You will always be able to identify them, like you said. And you're right. I've been talking to some of my writers with issues, and baby, they are on 10, and you're right, something like this. And so seriously, like you said, Laura, it's not a joke, because you're talking about people who really are mentally ill. And like you said, when something like this happens, and you know, they actually have a real reason to feel doom and gloom, they go
escalate it. They escalate the negativity. When you see this in oppression, they escalate the oppression. Like, for example, I went to a gas station, and in a neighborhood where everyone was in an oppressed neighborhood, where, you know, a real poor neighborhood, and I saw that was the time they decided to close the bathrooms because they don't want to clean the bathrooms. See, in normal people say, okay, the bathrooms are going to be needed more than ever with all these things closed. A lot of people use public restrooms. Let me make sure this thing is cleaned all the time. Let me be there and the ready for somebody. But the oppression causes you to go inward, like, this is a good reason not to do this. You know, they're looking for the reason. This is a good reason not to do this. This is a good reason to be crazier. This is a good reason to do this. And so their estrangements escalate because they're estranged from people. Mentally ill people. If you want to know if someone's mentally ill, ask them who in their family that are they not speaking to. And you can tell by the closeness of their actual blood relationship how crazy they are.
Because I know how you are, Laura. You do not mess around with these fathers whose children don't speak to them.
That
you're like,
is
okay,
an impossible
that's
person
that's
to do.
Like,
I need to know. That's one of my standards with the man.
You're like, if his children are not speaking to him, you go the way of the child. Like, I got to get out too. Okay.
Right. Now, I can hear, I'm listening for an estrangement of an old girlfriend. That's fine. An estrangement of...
But by the way, Laura, I'm going to say, I am not estranged from any of my exes. Yeah, and I met somebody who was like, how can you be friends with all of your exes? And I do have to say, I had to move along. Okay, I had to leave them alone.
I like to keep them, you know, as they can't be enemies. I can't have any enemies out there because they know too many things. So I keep them on board as well. I keep a benevolence on board as well. Anybody, I just make sure that they are okay.
For the most part, all of my exes, really, I'm talking about 30 years back. If they're in the city, I probably see them at least once a year. And I talk to them more than that.
Yeah.
They're listening to the show, even. They're going to tune in.
There you go.
You have a show? You're MMF, the Clarity Hotline, I need to hear you. You always got something to say. Hey, girl, I miss you.
That's right. And when you're so... One of the things I look at, the main thing I look at is what is the relationship with... I want to see the relationship with the people that you put on the earth. That's going to give me what I need to know. I want to see that relationship. And I deal with people who have different relationships. I had a friend of mine. In fact, it was an ex-boyfriend. For some reason, he wanted me to talk to his son and give an update. So we had an awkward three-way phone call. And I was just thinking, why is he calling me Laura? Okay, that's how they, okay. All right, just Laura. It's okay. It's my name. It's me going through my stuff. Because, you know, I don't like young people calling me, you know, but I'm not used to it. But anyway, okay. So this is not someone I talked to a long time. So I went through the, how old are you? You know, how old are you now? It's like 26. I'm thinking, that was 26 years ago when we had to break up due to your birth. But anyway, that's something else. That's something else. But
the point is, he had you talking to the child. Yeah, he had you talking to the child.
Yeah, because I think he wants to prove to me that he is in contact with him.
Okay.
He probably knows how I feel about estrangement. If you can't somehow have a relationship with the people on the that you brought forth to in the universe.
So we're gonna pivot. We gotta pivot. Yeah, because that's fun though. That's because we're about half. That's funny, but you're absolutely right, Laura. And we do want to do a show about, like you said, and also, you know, we talk a lot about people and how it is that they are not trying to discover what's wrong with themselves. So, and one of the main components is of mental illness is that there's no internal dialogue. Everything happens external. It's that person. That person has made me mad. This system isn't working for me. That person isn't that. I don't like him because he did this. She said that to me. How could they act like that with me? You know, it's just an eternal external dialogue, and there's no information about what was your role in this, right?
Oh,
is that
goodness.
It? Is that what is your role? What was your role? They don't come in like, you know, here's what I did. Like, you know how I started my story with Nana? I went up there and cursed him out. See how that story starts?
Yeah, yeah. That's the, because you're owning it. They don't own their behavior.
Okay, so.
They only own their great behavior because they're great.
Ooh.
You know, if you know anyone mentally ill, they're always, and then when they're not great, they're just the victim of somebody that's really evil. I know someone mentally ill who had a knife pulled on him and by a close relative, and I was like, can you believe she pulled a knife on me and threatened me? And I remember, I was thinking, well, what did you say? What had you done? I mean, that part was missing, like you just said.
And when you told me, I wasn't shocked either, remember?
Yeah,
I was like, oh, yeah, he was acting up. So now we're going to be starting to talk about how America does not want to give any money to people, to millions and millions of Americans in a pandemic. Like you said, again, mentally ill are going to be outside of that because they know so many people have so many internal issues that they can never get to the external issues, things like the federal government and what's really going on. They can't get to big sort of story items because they're so busy with, you know, the people down the street, the girl next door. They're so busy with hating their relatives that they don't even know that that the stimulus package is on its face inhumane.
Yeah, when they say taxpayers, the minute you do that, people start thinking to themselves, did I file? The poorest of people are going, wait, I didn't file, so now I'm ineligible. That's what you're talking about.
Do you actually know that there's an amount, I think if you make under a certain amount, and if somebody wants to call in and tell us, there's a certain amount that they tell you specifically, you don't have to file if you're under this amount. That would include most waiters don't file, most hairstylists don't file, most barbers don't file. I mean, do you know how many, but yet they pay cell phone bills, and I know good and well all of us that pay utility bills pay a tax every day. Every day
right.
that I have utility.
Right. You're absolutely right. So when they link it to the taxpayer, you know, the quickly, yeah, what tax? You mean file an IRS tax return? I mean, that can be included in the group, but what about the people that receive assistance? You know, you know who those people are. Why don't you just triple everybody's food stamps?
Why can't it be tied to the census? We got the census forms. They got them in our houses. They seem to, interestingly, they made the timing in here right before the pandemic. That was interesting timing, you know, because they didn't see any of this coming. But the census, all of the, they're in there in my front room. So they're all here so we can all fill them out. We can go online and fill them out. They can send out some checks. Now they're saying it's going to take them 8 weeks to send a check if they don't know your bank account. Laura?
See, similar to when Callie House over 100 years ago began her reparations campaign, they kept saying, Who has been a slave? How do we find out where they are? What? How? All that who? What? You know who we're talking about. You know, these people who kept accurate slave records, because their slaves were their property, that's their capital. They kept accurate records. When it came time to the woman saying, hey, reparations, they were like, who? People were like, they went blank.
Okay, Laura, we're doing a station break. We will come back, Laura. I want you, because you always go history. It's beautiful, too. Let's talk about what has always been done. As you say, it's just being done again. That's always your point. Let's go to station break, okay?
Black Talk Radio, your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Are we back? I think we are back.
Yes.
Have a quick comment or question. Give us a call at 704-802-5056. Hit the star key twice. Remember that, guys. Hit the star key twice on your phone to signal the host. Make sure you watch the background noise as usual. And also, if you just want to listen, you can do that. And you can hang on the line listening, or you can chat with us at www.uberconference.com/Black Talk Radio Network. And right now, you are joining a Men, Money, and Food, the Clarity Hotline with Jerry Hudson and
Laura Rose from Cleveland, Ohio.
And before we had the station break, we were talking about how it is that Congress is proposing a stimulus package that will exclude millions of Americans based on coded language, the language of taxpayer. And we were talking about how every single person over 18 and even under, because if you buy snacks, you pay taxes. We're trying to figure out exactly. We are now trying to uncover the maze. We're trying to find the people. As a matter of fact, I may do a video about this today. Where the people who don't pay taxes are. I'm going to go looking for them, Laura. I want to find them in America. Who does not pay taxes? Can I please? I'm going to go searching for them. Yes, that's a brilliant video.
You won't find any that don't pay taxes. You won't find any that don't pay taxes at all, because
unless they're a billionaire.
Then they won't pay taxes because they figured it out. Yeah, they don't pay taxes. Oh, but then they don't need $1,200, right? They get skipped over for the $1,200.
We having technical issues, Laura. You don't mind if I call you Laura? I think we're around the same age, do you?
I'm 56, so no, I'm fine. I don't care.
Yeah, but you know, to your point though, everybody pays taxes. If you go to the store and buy gas, you're paying taxes that's supposed to go towards the roads. If you go in the store and buy some snacks, like y'all said, you're paying a food tax. I don't know anything you can buy that's tax-free. Okay, we have her back. But remember, the Donald Trump tax cuts for the wealthy. Jeff Bezos and Michael Bloomberg and a lot of these corporations do not pay taxes. And we have our host back.
They don't need the $1,200. So it wouldn't matter, but
they're going to get money. He's putting money in there for businesses. What are you?
Exactly.
Now, I know you're
they don't need the individual.
Well.
But they're going to get, did you see that? You see that slush fund? It said they're going to give $5 billion to corporations and $500 billion to corporations and 100, the ratio was 5-1 to hospitals. Hospitals got the, you know, the corporate interests are going to get this thing through because they're going to make a lot of money on this.
And you're going to tell me Amazon is not going to get any of this money?
Yeah, they're going to get part of that $1 trillion. They're going to get 500. They're going to get 500, part of that 500 billion since they're the biggest. So they're going to get the most money from this. So Amazon will get the most money from this, period, bar none. But they already said that. That's why it's going to pass. Because Amazon's going to get more money.
So you're saying that you're giving it to taxpayers, but yet you're giving it to Amazon.
Right.
You see, Laura, that's what you said, the problem with capitalism. That's why we got to do a whole, anyway, we got to do a whole show.
About capitalism. The problem is capitalism. They're laughing. They're like, can't they figure this out that we are the problem, capitalism?
Okay, so, but I mean, so again, everybody's a taxpayer. If you've ever paid, I went to hotels, it's like a 20% in Chicago. They have a water is super taxed here for the bottle. I mean, are you serious? Have you seen the tax? Do you all have special taxes on water? I know.
They need special taxes on water. They just put the special on there. If it's there or not, they get it on something else. They get, there's something else that's taxed. It's like, really? When you find out something's taxed, you're like, really? That's taxed too? I can't think of it, but it'll come to me. But this whole thing of who's going to get this money? See how they have us? But they're clear when they say big corporate interests and hospitals are definitely getting money. Corporate interests are getting most of the money, most of our money, because we gave them the money to begin with. So, but that's capitalism.
And we're going to pay it back like they gave. And even in Illinois, they're talking about all of the big loans that they're giving to businesses. And as you know, there's traditionally a people who are not part of either small or big business. And, you know, and also just noticing how, although, you know, we know good and well, they make it clear that we can all catch the virus, we won't all be catching these business loans. See how they keep doing that? Like you said, capitalism. Nobody in our immediate circle will get any of this business loan money that comes out of this. See, that's why we
and keep in mind it's a loan.
Well, right. And even if okay. So that's how come we won't know. And I have a giant circle, and I have a giant circle in Chicago. I told you I'm involved in a lot of things. And again, that's another video. Let me find out if I can attach myself to anyone who gets any of the business loan in America, in Chicago, or in Illinois, after all of us have to stay home. You see how they include us always in the torture part, but on the recovery part, we're excluded? Everybody
has
to stay home.
That's right.
Everybody's supposed to shelter in place, but everybody can't get a check. You see that?
Of course. Well, back to when they had the lynchings.
Okay.
That's why it's so important to understand U.S. history, because then you're not ever confused. You're clear on they position Black America in a certain way so that you will not be able to get any kind of corporate benefits or any kind of small business. They've already eliminated that. They started much earlier than that with the lynchings. When they did the lynchings, they lynched Black businessmen. So they made sure that we wouldn't have any, you know, Black moguls that employ lots of Black people, like we were talking about on Tuesday. So they got rid of all those. And so the rich Black people are just entertainers. So, of course, it's never thinkers. You know, it's always just entertainers. And so it dissipates in one generation. So they've already figured all that out so that you'll never get anything. You'll never benefit from any kind of corporate taxes or any kind of small business. That's not going to be you, because you're going to be starting from scratch, because the goal is to keep the Black body as a commodity that starts from scratch each generation. So that's already been taken care of.
Well, wait. So, Laura, I got to get in there. So what you're saying is research. See, that's the thing. Again, that doesn't take research, and that's how come we have to understand research and not medical doctors. Technician is always tried and true. As a Black American, we must understand researched. And the fact that they have already researched, as you say, if you give this money to an entertainer, or it's particularly what I know well, these athletes who are under 18 years old, who traditionally come from single mothers, that that money will not make it to three generations down. By the model that they know. So if we concentrate the money here at this age based on this principle, this is what the outcome is going to be. We are under researchers. Do we understand that we are under researchers, Laura? This is not about feelings. This is not about I hate somebody and I can't stand what, you know, there's a great, you know, what, who's light skinned, who's dark. That's not about any of that. This is about money and research and outcomes.
Yeah, capitalism. Yeah. Yeah. Right. The black capitalists were not allowed to become, you know, to use the masses to help make them wealthy. We don't see that model anywhere. They were killed in those lynchings. They killed black businessmen and some women, but they're mainly killing black businessmen. They're killing the people that could lift black people out of the underclass. They'll never lift black people up. It's the people can we understand that? We know that to be true. They never have.
Wow. So what they do is traditional fun talking about this movie, but when you have a movement that talked about money as I did, like you said, what they did is they will traditionally lynch you, which I experienced in the courts. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Exactly.
We'll just make up, as a matter of fact, we'll make up some stuff, you know, we'll say, we'll get somebody who hates her, it's always the unsubstantiated, I hate her and she said this. I mean, if you look at these courts, the courts are riddled with, when you look at the unsubstantiated imprisonment, and meaning that there's only one layer of evidence and somebody has been imprisoned on somebody else's word, somebody that they were a natural enemy to. I mean, just what we call it unsubstantiated, because there's nobody else that can support it. There's no evidence to support it, because the truth can always be supported from so many directions. As a researcher, you know that. The truth can be supported from a million different areas. A lie cannot.
That's very true. That is so very true. That's very profound, Jerry. The truth can be supported from many different areas.
These people that are wrongly incarcerated, if you look at the case, you can see that it was never substantiated. I mean, it's ridiculous. They didn't have a motive. We have a guy I grew up with, you know, a policeman in the neighborhood's wife gets killed, and they pick him up, and they supposedly discovered 36 years later that he didn't do it. Well, he didn't have a motive. The policeman moved to Phoenix with his girlfriend the next year. Like, what? What? This is 36 years ago.
That's pretty common. The spousal killings they're pretty common. They kill when they're tired of the woman. They want to make some money by killing her, take the insurance, get rid of her.
Had been killed in our neighborhood in 30 years, and they just picked up this boy that I grew up with, Bailey, for this crime, and they're now exonerated him. The neighborhood knew he was innocent 36 years ago.
Wow.
Okay, so anyway. So now, let's talk about... But like you said, there's case... I mean, and that's just, again, back to what I say. What about the people that we can touch and that, you know, that are not a TV subject? I mean, the things in our life... How come we all know those stories that are personal stories? Like I said, I know his name, Bailey. I know all of his brothers. I know his daddy. Okay, I know that he was wrongfully incarcerated for more than 30 years, but I will not know a person that gets any of this Illinois business loan. Look at that. That's what you're talking about. We need to just take a look at that, right?
Well, that's how they do it.
Okay.
Okay. That's how they do it.
Okay. So, like a researcher would have asked the question, like, I wonder who did the policeman pay so that he could get all of that to happen and so he could move away to Phoenix. That's a research question. Okay.
There you go. Well,
that's a research question. Like, well, now who financially benefited once this woman was dead? And let's see what their motive.
He got her insurance, so he can live happily ever after. That's a common theme.
And a warm climate. Okay, so the spook who sat by the door, Laura.
Yeah,
I want to tell people that we're pivoting, audience, pivot. We want to talk about some good old movies, and I told Scotty has some awesome stuff out there, Laura. I want you to go out there. There's a sister out there. She's awesome, and she is intelligent, and she's documented. She's talking about the lies that Netflix told in the CJ, you know, the story, Laura. You know the story.
Well, I've studied the history of black business in America, and there is, you know, I want to just bring this up before we even talk about that. I haven't seen it, but Juliet E.K. Walker is the world's leading scholar on black business in America, and she has many sources. She's a first-rate researcher, and she's documented a lot about, you know, practically any black business person that's taken a breath in America that has, you know, made his or her mark. And so she has written extensively on Madam C.J. Walker. So if you want to actually get to a source other than like a Hollywood-type source, you can go to her. And I think she discusses the Trumbo, you know, how she gets all that stuff from Trumbo. You know who I'm talking about, Marie, the woman in Chicago. Give me her name. I can't think of.
Okay.
She discusses the one who C.J. Walker learned from.
Okay, you know, okay. You know, gotcha.
Yeah, so she just, there's a whole lot of discussion about her, but it's interesting to see these people depicted. But it's also, you know, it's kind of tired to hear black people talk about, oh, this is wrong, that's wrong. I'm like, this is entertainment. Burger King and McDonald's tell you this is delicious,
wonderful, Laura,
it's
bigger than that. It's also fulfilling stereotypes. It's not just entertainment. It's also to keep the train running like it is. So that's why I'm recommending that you go out and look at movies like, let's talk about, so you said you didn't see
I see what your point is.
You see what I'm saying? That's just, they got, because she said they even had LGBTQ, you know, they had some gay person historically. They created gayness even. So that's the point. What we're trying to say, that's why we need black talk radio. You know, there was a whole division. No, she's getting really specific about the whole stereotype that light-skinned women were against dark-skinned women. No, she said they went in, Laura. I mean, they really added a whole lot of stuff in this film, as they do, to keep the divisions there. To keep us to not realizing that it was actually black businessmen that were lynched, that there is no division between light-skinned and dark-skinned black women. That's ridiculous. Stop. So that we can at least stop some of it. And I'm telling you that in 1973, there was a man who wrote a book about we know what they're doing, but what it is that we can do. Where's that story? See, that's why that movie couldn't be made today, because the spook who sat by the door is having a whole different dialogue. He's going inward, Laura. It's a spiritual journey. What is it we can do to stop all this? That's what Sam Greenlee starts talking about in The Spook Who Sat by the Door. How do we use what we know about America to change America? That's what Sam Greenlee did. So, what do you think when you hear that, Laura?
Well, how do we find out? We're back to my mantra. How do we find out? The history of America is completely well chronicled.
Jerry and Laura, let me help y'all out, because this is relevant to Black Talk Radio. So here's the plot of The Spook Who Sat by the Door, and it is free on YouTube, so you can go watch it. I recommend it. I even did a watch party. We had a birthday party for one of my daughters, and it was for one of my grandchildren, and they had gotten this great big old thing to show, you know, kid movies on. You know, it was inflatable. like you, the big screen, you go see a drive-in, but this particular company has one that they bring out to your house. You set it up in the backyard and you blow it up. And then I just used a laptop and with a projection, you know, adapter to it. And then we was out there at night, you know, and I was like, okay, because I had a bunch of young people there, and I was like, we're gonna watch Spook Who Sat by the Door, pulled it up on YouTube and showed it to the young people. So here's the plot. So a black man becomes the first CIA agent. The first CIA agent. They was trying to make him fail, and that's a whole journey he had to go through. And so that's where the spook comes in. Spies are known as spooks. But he takes what he learns in the CIA and then goes to these young quote-unquote gang members, or as some of my younger people tell me, no, street families. Goes to this street family and then trains them in counterintelligence and also weapons and stuff like that. And then they launch a revolution. So I'm not going to tell you if it was successful or not. You got to go watch the movie. Now, that's about, you know how we always hear people, well, I'm going to change the system. I'm going to go in and I'm going to change the system. But what happens more times than not? The system changes them, right? They start getting that corporate money and sponsorship and all of that. And then they aren't the people that they used to be in their youth. Okay, they might have been civil rights activists, but and getting beat by the police while they out there marching. And then 20 years later, they've been in Congress and they're voting for bills to put more police on the street to crack us upside the head. That's a real person. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but you take a guess.
I was only thinking Russia, Chicago, but we don't have any. Go on.
Back to Animal Farm. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, go on.
What was I trained in when I went into the military at 20 years old? Who was not that conscious about how the world worked, knew racism exists, but did not know how they use black people to perpetrate racism. I studied radio communications. It's because of that background with that knowledge that when I got kicked off of a white person's platform to do a radio program, I used that background knowledge I learned in the military from radio communications to create the Black Talk Radio Network. That's what that film is about.
Scotty!
That sounds wonderful. Woo! Scotty, that's wonderful. And Scotty, can you give me a list of the people that you would like for me to call personally? And if you want to script it, what exactly to say? Because I've no problem with making calls to call people for your telethon to raise money, to get this money going, so that they say money changes everything. So that we can get up the money, so we can be competitive with the Breakfast Club. So that's what we can have this show competitive with the Breakfast Club.
But Scotty just told his spook story. Taking what you know and changing the platform, changing the landscape. You don't have to be anybody. You can be anybody can change the landscape. Scotty, I am just so right. I mean, I'm filled up, Laura, with Scotty's story because Laura hasn't seen the spook, but that's what the spook is about. It's about taking what you know, like you said, and not becoming a capitalist. How is it that we don't become a capitalist, that we become a communityist? Okay.
Well, Muhammad Yunus has some work on that. I've read Muhammad Yunus, and Muhammad Yunus is the one who got the poorest of poor people, and he also did it in Chicago, too. He got the poorest of poor people in some third world country. I can't call it right now, but he got them to produce their goods and to earn a living. It's a fascinating book. He got the Nobel Prize for it, and it's a model of what you just said, making the community benefit from what it produces. You know, making the community, not using the capitalism model where one person walks away with all the money, but enriching the community. And it was done right there in Chicago as well. because people say, oh, it's not going to work in the United States. They picked a poor neighborhood in Chicago and lifted those people up. Now, it didn't make local, you're telling me right now because you're not nodding.
Right? That's right.
You're telling me it didn't make local news.
Well, like you said, the spook who sat by the door, could we be making that today? I mean, as you said, since that was actually a model of how to change, how to bring about change, because that's what that was, Scotty just said. That's what he modeled when he wanted to make a difference when he was kicked out. That's what happened to me when I was kicked out as a researcher. I did start my own research firm. That's what happens to those of us that are, you know, that know exactly, as you say, as a researcher, guess what? I always knew that black researchers only lasted a certain amount of time. I never expected to last on a project, the duration of the project. I watched how black researchers particularly were only in certain phases of research, and I realized that that was scientifically purposeful for a specific sinister reason. Fill in the blanks, okay? That, you know, come on. You cannot have black scientists. One of the main, you know, the science is not difficult to understand. I hope people don't think that. That's a lie. That's one of America's great lies. Science is one of the first places that is going to change the way you see the world. You know, one of the greatest scientists that I know, my grandmother only went to the eighth grade, so that, we're going to do a whole show about that. But you need to watch the spook who sat by the door so that you can start to understand why you need to become educated and how to become conscious, Laura, and how to bring about change. And how to stop looking at what's always happened and say that's the only thing that's going to happen, right?
That's a very good optimistic way to look at things. I love it. Back to your grandmother. Let me just say this: in that generation, actually eighth grade, the way things were taught, that was really enough for that society. Actually, from that period,
just in my own family,
that was enough. Sixth grade was considered, in many places in the South, that was considered enough education because of the way things were taught. And those folks, for the society that we had, that really was enough for that.
My grandmother knew more about science than any professor I had at Howard University. You know, my grandmother knew whether or not the crop was going to grow, and that was in May. Okay?
Yeah, people had to know things. People had to know things for real in that time because you had no access to, you couldn't, like, for example, if you look at someone in our grandparents' generation, the women, they could cook way better than Martha Stewart.
Okay, come on. My niece,
you had to know.
I get mad because my niece thinks she's all that because she was raised by my grandmother. She makes about $150,000 a year. She's a capitalist. But I get angry at her because I'm like, do you think you are smarter than Rosetta Jordan? Because you're making money in America? See, I'm about to get, because I'm like, what's wrong with you? That woman knew more than any of us. You are just
look how they want us to, you know how we talk about in men, money, and food, we want to take one thing,
okay,
have it right, and hold it to the rafters when you need a combination of things. You need a strong family. You need to know something. You need to have formal education. You need to have money. You need to have employees. You need to have friends. You need to have a whole gamut of things going on for you. But you know, is your term, it's holding the one thing you have up
to the rafters. You know she doesn't. Please, she lives in isolation with that $150. You know how they do black female capitalists.
That's the wrong message. That's the wrong message.
Condoleezza Rice.
That's the wrong message. That's the wrong message. See, that's only the wrong messages. You get one thing right. Well, with Condoleezza, she thinks, you know, just because she's got, you know, a high position and probably plenty of money and being well connected, but look, we can see what she's missing. I mean, you can't do anything without a family. Come on, you need a family.
Come on,
you need a family.
No black cheerleader aspires to be Condoleezza Rice. I've never heard a girl tell me that they wanted to be Condoleezza. That's when George Bush, I was a cheerleading coach. I never heard one of those black girls say they wanted to be Condoleezza when they grew up. They had that much.
You need a family. You need a functioning family. to make it in this world. You need a family. That's what when Scotty corrected, he said street family. So don't call it a gang. It's not a group of people that aren't together. He's implying that the young people are like, this is the family that they need to bring. So human beings need to operate in a family. I mean, who doesn't know that? You know, I mean, are we going to call our friend Rosalind out? And say,
my niece, with her thinking she all that, and she was raised by the smartest woman, one of the smartest people on the planet. She happened to be, because my aunt died, so she was raised by my grandmother, who knew whether or not the crop was going to grow in May. I want her to go down to Mississippi now and tell me what crop going to grow. Stop playing. Can she do it, Laura?
No, she can't.
You know she can't.
And she, quiet as it's kept, she won't be able to do that job if the white people decide they don't want her anymore. Because you know how that one looks.
Come on now.
But never does your family, this is why it's important to have family, never does your family just disengage.
They never do.
They don't do that. You can't disengage. Try to disengage. If you have a family and you're entrenched in one, try to disengage. It won't work. That's why estrangement is so crazy. Okay,
I know, Scotty, we got to go at some point, but we are having fun. And listen, so what we want you all to do, as always, we're going to have a telethon. We want you guys to support our program, Men, Money, and Food, the Clarity Hotline. We want you all to come out and listen next week. We promise to have some exciting topics that we will all learn and grow from together. We're on this journey together. We're not saying that we are everything. We want to take you with us, and we want to all get better together. Go out and spend some time watching The Spook Who Sat by the Door. Laura, try to watch it this weekend, okay?
I will. You have a good weekend, listeners, and you have one too, Jerry, The Spook Who Sat by the Door. I got to watch
it. Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.